And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick. I wanted to just give a huge shout out for The Receptionist for iPad. They've been a sponsor for this podcast for 4 years in a row, and I just want to say how grateful I am to their partnership and what they do for the not only therapist, but also medical community. Your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like billing or simply trying to make a cup of coffee between appointments or trying to use the bathroom, constant interruptions can derail your entire day. This episode and this year's podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist, a sign-in app company. The Receptionist for iPad is a HIPAA-ready digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients or patients can check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from the interruptions and make the most of your time, because it is valuable. Start a free 14-day trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, this is Patrick, and I wanted to share something really exciting with you. The All Things Private Practice podcast is changing to the Neurodivergent Entrepreneur podcast. When I discovered that I was autistic ADHD 5 years ago, everything changed for me. It's wild because at that point in time, my career had just taken off. Over these last few years, I've done a lot of deconstruction, worked through a lot of internalized ableism, learned as much as I can about neurodiversity in general, and I really want to start unpacking what it means to be a neurodivergent entrepreneur. So in this podcast, I'm going to be interviewing other neurodivergent entrepreneurs of all walks of life and all different areas of business and creativity, thought leaders, visionaries, creatives, leaders, etc. Real, unfiltered, authentic conversations, no positive psychology, always highlighting both sides of the coin with a lot of nuance, a lot of duality, and a lot of honest conversation, highlighting the strength and the struggle. Make sure to download, like, subscribe, and share the Neurodivergent Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey everyone, you are listening to another episode of the All Things Private Practice Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Casale, joined today by Amanda Landry. She is an LMHC. I get confused by all the acronyms and all of this, since I am an LCMHC. In Florida, she is a group practice owner and a co-moderator of my Private Practice Collective Facebook group. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about being an entrepreneur, wearing all the hats, how having good support systems in your businesses are going to really help you flourish, because so often I think we feel like everything is on our shoulders, and if we're not at our best, or if we can't show up, or if we're sick, then it can all come crumbling down without the right systems in place and the right support in place. So Amanda, thanks for coming on and making the time, and really happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited about being on the podcast. I am a listener and a follower, and so I feel honored to be here today.
Well, thank you. That support means a lot. It's always, it's been a cool journey so far, and just love having people on and just sharing their stories. So you own a group practice in Florida. I know you have, it's a pretty large size practice at this point in time. I can't remember how many clinicians you have, but can you talk a little bit about the fact, like, before we started recording, you were talking about your toddler and like being a new mom and like all these responsibilities and all these hats that you have to wear to keep things afloat. And I'm just curious about your story and your journey into this.
So I always tell people I never intended on having a group practice. I never even intended on going into private practice. I think I was like a lot of therapists when I graduated from grad school. It's like you just went and worked at an agency. And then, of course, what happens? You get burnt out at your agency and you're like, where do I go next? And so, you know, I started my solo practice by joining what was like a small group practice. I was a renter, but it was a small group practice. And I realized, wow, I can do this and I would like to do this. And over the past, this is my 10-year anniversary of being in private practice. I have grown from renting from somebody to a 40-person 5-location group practice, which if you would have told me that 10 years ago, I never would have believed it.
Wow, that's impressive. And being a group practice owner myself and having 15 therapists and 2 psychiatric providers, I know how much work goes into ensuring that the practice is running smoothly and people are well taken care of and the systems are in place. So 45 locations, I mean, that's a major feat. And do you feel like at this point in time that 40 soon becomes 50, becomes 60? Is that the kind of mindset that we're at?
So that's where we're in a growth phase. I think I was nervous to say that before. Like, I didn't really tell, like, I wasn't like, oh, we are going to go into our 5th location. We're going to go into our 6th location. We're going to have 10 locations. Like, I was nervous to say that. And now I'm very open about that. Like, we're in a growth model because I see what's happening in the industry. A couple things are happening. There are a lot of solo practices where when I started, there were solo practices, but there weren't that many. And there were even less group practices that were run by my contemporaries. It was really group practices who had been around forever, right? And so I know that I want to stay ahead of the curve where I see a lot of practices being bought up by bigger companies and we don't want to get swallowed up. We want to stay competitive. And we know one way to stay competitive is to grow in a way that's strategic for our business.
Well said. Yeah, I think that we are in a new era of private practice ownership where I think COVID is the impetus, maybe. People were sick of saying, I'm going to go work and not be taken care of at an agency job. And then you've got all these resources and Facebook groups and everything promoting self-practice and private practice ownership and taking a leap and all that stuff. And you're seeing a lot of private practice owners, which I love. And you're right. You're seeing a lot of group practice owners that are our colleagues. And there are a lot of practices that are being bought out by major corporations and major players in the industry. So tell me how you stay competitive. How do you stay ahead of the curve when you're thinking, I already see what's transpiring here and I need to be really intentional and strategic about how I move forward?
You know, it's kind of funny. I would say one of the best ways that I gather a lot of information is Facebook groups. I see what other people are writing, what they're saying, what kind of referrals they're getting, what kind of questions they're asking. I try to connect, like you and I have connected. I've connected with many people that I'm sure listen to your podcast or that are our colleagues and talk to them about their practices, talk to them about where things are at so I can hear. Like I listen. I don't think I put that together until you just asked, but I listen a lot to what people are saying. Because that'll give you a lot of information. For instance, I'm seeing so many people ask for in-person sessions. Like that's a big push lately. So I realized I think there will always be a market for virtual, but I realized for us in South Florida, because so many people are asking for in-person, why not open a 6th location? Why? Because we know there are people asking for this. And it's not even just in my Facebook group, it's in all like I'm in tons of mom Facebook groups and local Facebook groups where people are like, I want in person. I'm looking for in person. And so I think that's a big thing. And then also looking like at economic trends, what kinds of things are happening in our economy with other industries, what's being revolutionized, what's being bought up, who's being laid off and staying on top of that. I think as a business owner, we have to do those things. I think we have to be clued into what's happening outside of just our industry.
Yeah, great advice. And I think it sounds like you're saying you're doing market research by just simply connecting and being curious about what people are doing in our industry as well and getting a sense of the trends, right? Like in Florida, okay, we're seeing people want to go back into in-person sessions after 2 years of being more virtual based. And in North Carolina, we're not really seeing that as much. I mean, it seems like hybrid is here to stay and telehealth is honestly taking over. And I think that just depends on your state and your demographic too. And it's important to really be aware of that because otherwise you're kind of going into this blindly and then floundering when, you know, the source of clientele or referrals dries up or the necessity or the supply and demand is no longer there. So you're meeting a need by saying, I'm opening a 6th location. Now tell me about like opening your 1st and 2nd locations. How much fear and anxiety was existing when you were like, I'm going to start this group practice, open this location, and grow into a second. Tell me about that process for you.
Every time I make a move, I always have some level of anxiety. Some of it is probably healthy because I think it's important to have some anxiety. Like, you're going to have to pay a rent, right? Like, somebody's going to be knocking at the door. Like, you have to have some kind of emotion behind that to make sure you do the things you need to do in order to fill up your space. And then I have my own anxieties about doomsday and bad things happening. So there, and that's the part I have to quiet down.
And so when I open up, that's the more rational side, right? Like, that's the one.
Completely.
Imposter syndrome. Every single clinician's going to quit on the same day. All of this stuff's going to happen and fall apart in one day.
That's exactly where my brain goes. So I have to quiet that down. So I can be, for me, it's about being strategic in what we do. And so when I opened my first location, I remember feeling really excited. And then when, for me, the big step was when I went for my first location, we had a 3-office suite to a 6-office suite. And that I felt like this was big time. Like, this was a big deal. Like, and at that time, other group practice owners that I really respected were starting to hit numbers like 30,000 a month. Like, more than 5 years ago, 30,000 a month was like a big deal in a group practice. Like, that was like, you had really made it. Like, when I heard that my business coach hit 30,000 a month, I was like, wow, like, they must be doing something so amazing. And so to then push myself to go on a space that would be able to make that kind of revenue was really exciting. And since then, we have certainly exceeded that, and other group practices have exceeded that. So we've all collectively, I see, have moved the needle forward, right? Where practices are making, like, I remember when it was a big deal to say you made 6 figures in a year, which is still a big deal no matter where you're at. But like, to make 6 figures in 1 month, like, that blew my mind. Like, I sometimes still can't believe those kinds of things have actually happened.
Right. Absolutely. And it's a good reframed from starting point A to where you're currently at and going. And tell me a little bit about, you know, you have a larger group practice, you're growing, you're being really proactive and intentional. You also have a lot of responsibilities in your life and have a lot of different roles. So how does that play a part?
I was not prepared emotionally for the shift that was going to occur inside of me when I had a child. I don't think anybody could ever prepare you for that. And so for anybody listening, wondering when they have children, maybe what that would look like, I don't think you can be prepared for that. And I think it looks different for everybody. Prior to becoming a parent, I had seen a full caseload. And when I say a full caseload, I mean, I was seeing 25 or 30 clients a week for many years. And I actually enjoyed that. It didn't burn me out. It kind of gave me spirit and life. And, you know, I would take Fridays off and do my admin work. And that worked out really well for a long time. And even when I got pregnant, I kind of like chugged along, did my thing, ran the group practice while seeing clients. And then I remember I was supposed to return from maternity leave. And I just, there was something that I felt inside, like, that said, I'm just not ready for this. Like, I was not ready. And at the same time, the group practice exploded. We were in the middle of COVID. We had hired a lot. We had promoted a clinical director. We had brought on an additional admin support. And so while my baby was growing, my business was growing, and that my time and effort was being really split between those two things, that there was no time or energy, let's even call it, left to see clients. And I don't think it would have been fair. I mean, I could have gone back and saw, you know, a handful of people and really just done it that way. But for me, it was easier to make a clean break and say, I'm a mom and I'm a business owner and I'm always a therapist. I can't ever turn that off. But there was just this shift that occurred inside of me that really changed the role that I had within my business and just with my relationship with clients.
Yeah, that's really lovely to kind of think about it that way, that shift and just realizing priorities are shifting and changing and your energy is shifting and changing. And that's probably a good segue into having the right support staff and systems in place to ensure that growth can continue despite maybe your inability to be as involved in a certain capacity, or your role just simply changing because of life circumstance. So you seem pretty excited before we started recording to talk about that. Tell me a little bit about why that's so important and what you're seeing from therapists that you're connecting with who are not able to do those things right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting when I talk to a lot of people, especially people in the solo practice level, I'm always surprised at like how little admin support they have, right? So if they're not answering the phones, answering emails, doing their social media, or if they're out sick, they don't have any support. And that's what's really hard about being a solo practitioner, which I think is why a lot of people are drawn to group practices lately, because with our group practice and many group practices, that's what's built in. It's all of the admin support, somebody answering your phone, somebody booking your intake, somebody, you know, calling if a credit card gets declined, or open supervision group. So for me, I think I realized I needed a lot of support, and that I also wanted to provide support to the people who worked for me. And so I knew we needed two levels of support in my practice. We needed the administrative support. I always have somebody doing billing, credentialing, and answering my phones, even as a solo practitioner, just because I know I'm the kind of person I need support. Like, that's really important to me. And then I also knew I needed help clinically. I mean, I had been answering all of the phone calls. I had been answering all of the emergency services. And the other clinicians in my practice, if I wasn't there, they were doing it. But we needed a streamlined process. So I promoted a clinical director and hired two director of operations to oversee the different locations that we had. And that was really, that shifted a lot, because now the clinicians had somewhere to go with somebody who had the time and could create that, versus like catching me. I remember therapy, she's like, catch me between sessions in office. I wasn't even like decompressed from my session. Someone's like, hey, you know, I have this client, and can you answer this? And can you answer that? Now they had somebody who would be fully present with them. And then I could be fully present with my admin team and the time that I had. And so it just shifted the roles that everybody had.
Yeah, I love that, because I think that it makes things flow a lot more smoothly, both on the client experience side and on the clinical side, so that clients aren't getting like disjointed information when they call or email in. They're being scheduled, you know, with consistency. They're being discussed and communicated to with consistency. It also ensures that you have that tiered level of support so that you don't have to be responsible for everything. You don't have to be responsible for every conversation that's going on inside the practice. And I like what you said about having admin support in solo practice. And I know a lot of you listening that are just starting are like, where am I ever going to get the money to have admin support starting off? And that is a valid question and concern, but you are going to make more money in private practice than you did at an agency job. That's just a fact. Starting to reinvest into outsourcing to have that admin support. Because one thing I see in my Facebook group and all over the place is just like, I don't have time to call clients back. I don't want to call clients back. I just am, my systems are so disorganized that it causes me extra layers of stress. And we so often don't realize, like, if I had a virtual assistant or a scheduler or a biller or whoever who took this off of me, where I didn't have to call Blue Cross 4 hours a week and deal with claim denials and rejections, where I didn't have to spend an hour getting people scheduled and onboarded, you are actually giving yourself more time to make the money doing the things that you love to do. And that's why I think outsourcing is so crucial. And we oftentimes only look at the short-term investment of like, but that's money coming out that I don't necessarily have coming in. But if you stop thinking about it in that way and realize, this is actually going to buy me time, because 1 hour of your time on the phone with Blue Cross is not the same investment as it is doing 1 hour of clinical work with a session that you're getting paid for. So being able to allocate what's important and having those systems in place is really crucial.
I think that's probably one of the hardest lessons that I learned in being a business owner, is what my hour was worth and what tasks I was doing was worth. That was a really big shift that I made when I was the coachee, when I was getting coaching, because I was And I, and again, I had always had an admin, but there were just some things I was doing that I needed to hand off. I was thinking about it when I first started. I think the first few invoices that I had sent over to my virtual assistant was like for $100 for the month. You know, I had found somebody local, which I felt very lucky that to do. And it was great. It really was not even comparatively that much money. And now we pay her way more than that. And she's worth like her weight in gold. And I had just always found that so helpful, but I still struggled with other things, even personally. Like I was doing a lot of things around the house that I could outsource much easier. And that was a big shift that I had to make. Like I didn't grow up in a family. Like we certainly did not have a maid growing up at all. I didn't grow up with money. And so there were certain things I was kind of uncomfortable doing or uncomfortable experiencing. And I realized if I wanted to take my business to the next level, that I would really have to let go of those things and that I would really have to outsource them and pay for them. And that I would make more money in the long run or the business would make more money. It's not even just for me to make more money. It's for the business to make more money, for me to do the things that I'm good at. I'm a good strategic thinker. My clinical director often jokes like, we don't need you back in the office seeing clients. There we can hire for that. What we need you to do is forge relationships and do the business planning and to, you know, get us offices and to do that bigger picture stuff. And so at every stage, just the same with the anxiety, there's things I've had to let go of and I still miss my clients. Like, I don't think I acknowledge that probably as much as I could. Like, I miss seeing clients. I miss that clinical work. I still read and do podcasts and try to stay connected in that way. But it has been a big shift to let go of that and to mourn that side. But on the flip side, to celebrate the successes that I've had and the whole group practice has had.
That's really well said. I mean, that's a good way to kind of take a step back and to experience grief of transitioning out of potentially working as a clinical professional and therapist, but also the recognition that you're helping grow, you're helping create jobs and opportunities for people in your community. And by really using your strengths to your advantage and really being intentional with your time. I've had to do that too. Like I didn't have many clients prior to throat surgery in my therapy practice, and post throat surgery, I have zero now. And that was not intentional, but losing my ability to speak for long amounts of time has been challenging. So kind of forced me out of that capacity and that role, but it allows me to just have more time to focus on, like you said, growing community relationships, connecting so that the practice can continue to stay successful, continue to get referrals coming in consistently. We want to ensure that our clinicians are well taken care of. So that's priority number one for me in that business. And I think that having good admin support, a good clinical director, good team leads on staff, really, really important, because I can step away and not be anxious that my phone's going to be blowing up or my email or that something's going to come crumbling down. I trust the people that are in place. And that took a long time, not just to trust them, to hire the right people who get the vision, who are committed to it, but also for my own control issue to be like, I can do this job. I can do this role. I have to, you know, I should be the one to do it. And we stress that a lot is like, you may be good at something, but that doesn't mean you should be the one to do it. And your time could be better spent elsewhere, knowing that it can help lead to growth for so many different levels because you're not focusing on the little details every single day. So lots of layers to that and lots of nuance, but it's also an evolutionary process of being a small business owner. And I think it's a really important one to come to terms with and take a step back and make a list of all of your roles and responsibilities in your day job, whether it's private practice, group practice, ownership, coaching, whatever the case may be, thinking about the things that you can start to ask for support with, the things that you don't want to do, don't know how to do, don't have time to do. Those should be number one. That's the low-hanging fruit. Then it's about getting to that next tier where it's like, I could do this, I kind of enjoy it, but my time could be better served elsewhere or better used elsewhere. That's the next level. And really starting to think about how you can optimize your time, because I was just having a different discussion on an earlier podcast I recorded today. For me, money, yeah, it's great. I love being an entrepreneur. I love making more money than I did when I was working for someone else. But really, time and energy are the resources here. That's the valuable stuff. That's the stuff you're not going to get back. So being really efficient and intentional about how you spend those resources is really important to me.
And that's important to me too, both at my level and my clinician's level, which is why we try to be very efficient and effective in our group practice and the systems that we have, because I want my clinicians to feel like they can come in, see their client, write their note, maybe go to a meeting, you know, once a month, come to supervision if they want to, and that's it. Like, they don't necessarily have to do a lot of other things. So I want them to also feel that. I don't want them to feel like, okay, they're a part of a group practice, yet they have to make phone calls and they have to market and they have to do all of these other things. So that has been, I think, a big part of our success as a group practice, is that people can come in, they're joining something that is functional and something that is supportive, and that they can also have their work-life balance. And then we pay at the top end of things. So that has also been very helpful. Though we have a lot of expenses, I'm a very fiscally responsible kind of entrepreneur, where I'm not putting out large amounts of money for things that don't make sense for the business. I'm also very strategic. And I think that has been very helpful then to be able to really put our money where we need it, which in this past year has been in a lot of admin support. We actually just did an overhaul of our whole leadership team. People got promotions. They were allotted more hours to work in their admin role. And so that has been a really big shift and exciting, because we've up-leveled the whole practice.
That's great to hear. I love that. And it makes so much more sense to operate that way. And for our, my perspective too, my group practice, I really try to prioritize people over profit. I want them to have work-life balance that we often preach in this profession, but don't practice. And I really want them to just be able to show up and see clients and not have to deal with the million other details. If they had to do that, why are they working for me? Go work for yourself, because there's really no difference at that point in time. So just really trying to change the way that these group practice structures are run too, in terms of how we treat the people who work for us. And I think that we both do that really well. For everyone that's listening, do you have any tips or advice if you want to create this level of growth and just you're having multiple responsibilities and life happens, it's just the reality, just things that could be helpful for them to hear?
Yeah, I think our whole theme has been getting support, and that's both personally and professionally. On the personal end, are you seeing a therapist? I've absolutely been in therapy over these past few years. Do you have, what other kind of support do you need? Whether it's family support, if you don't necessarily have family support, can you have people hired help, people who can help you within your home and within your responsibilities, friends? And then at the professional level, do you have colleagues you can go to and get support from? Are you in a supervision group? Are you getting coaching from somebody? Are you doing things that are really connecting you to other people? And then from a group practice standpoint, do you have enough admin support? Do you have a clinical director if you have a medium to large size group practice, or you're thinking about that? Do you have enough people answering your phones? Where are you getting your support from? Because it's really, really, really hard to do on your own at all, for both personally and professionally. We all need support, and assessing that. And even I'm always assessing how much support I have personally and professionally, and where we can kind of plug those holes.
Yeah, I love that. That's great advice. And that, support comes in so many ways and can be obtained in so many different capacities too. And it is important both personally and professionally. I do think having your own therapist, having your own coach or mentor, mastermind group, group of colleagues, just people you can bounce ideas off of. Then again, the admin support, there's so many ways to have it. And it's really helpful. It will make your life a lot less stressful. Being an entrepreneur is stressful. Never going to sugarcoat that, but it's also unbelievably rewarding. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I like to joke that my worst day as an entrepreneur is a million times better than my best day at my agency job. And I stand by that statement 100%. But that does mean you have to take care of yourself and really put the pieces in place to allow yourself to be successful too. So really great advice, Amanda. I appreciate that. Can you please tell the audience where they can find more of what you're offering these days and where, how to find you?
So the easiest place to find me is in my Facebook group, My Private Practice Collective. We are, I was just looking today, 18,700 people, which again is another thing that blows my mind. Never intended to have a Facebook group that large. So there, or if you're not on Facebook, myprivatepracticecollective.com. And if you're interested in learning about my group practice, we are Caring Therapists of Broward.
All of that information will be in the show notes so that you have easy access to it. And I just want to say again, thank you for all the wisdom today and sharing these resources and these tips. This is really, really helpful for the audience to hear.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to share this with my audience.
For everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, there's new episodes coming out every single Sunday on all major platforms. Like, download, subscribe, and share. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway. We'll see you next week. We'll